Well, welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. Today, we'll be discussing the treatment of H. pylori infections in patients with peptic ulcer disease. There are currently 14 different treatment options that can be employed to eradicate Helicobacter pylori from the GI tract. And while clinical practice guidelines give general recommendations about which treatments are preferred, there have been several new treatment regimens studied in recent years. Unfortunately, there's a relative paucity of efficacy data available, and we can't be certain about which treatments are most effective and best tolerated. Joining me today is Dr. Ben Pollinger and Dr. Nima Patel-Shori from Temple University School of Pharmacy. Doctors Pollinger and Patel-Shori wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled, What's the Story, H. pylori? New Regimens in the Toolbox, in which they critically examine the results of a network meta-analysis published online in the British Medical Journal in August 2015. Ben and Nima, thank you so much for joining me today for the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
My first question, Nima, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the study entitled Comparative Effectiveness and Tolerance of Treatments for Helicobacter pylori, a Systematic Review and Network Meta-Analysis to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
So Lee and colleagues conducted a systematic review and network meta-analysis to determine the most efficacious and tolerable treatment for the eradication of H. pylori. They included 143 randomized control studies that evaluated 7, 10, and 14-day regimens in treatment-naive patients and compared 13 regimens to the standard 7-day triple treatment defined as simultaneous PPI plus clarithromycin plus amoxicillin or metronidazole. The highest strength treatment was the 7 days of concomitant treatment defined as PPI plus 3 antibiotics, often amoxicillin, clarithromycin, and nitroimidazole. Most treatments were better compared to the standard 7 days triple treatment. In terms of tolerance, shorter treatment time had lower likelihood of adverse effects, with 7 days of probiotic supplemented triple treatment and 7 days of levofloxacin-based triple treatment having significantly better results than the standard 7 days triple treatment.
So, Ben, before you critique the study methodology, I'm wondering if you could explain what a network meta-analysis is and how that is different than the typical meta-analysis, and what are the quality indicators that readers should be looking for when they examine this kind of study?
As I'm sure the listeners know, a traditional meta-analysis collates data from studies to compare two different interventions. But each individual study included in the meta-analysis must feature the same treatments. We refer to this type of traditional meta-analysis as a pairwise meta-analysis, as it is a more precise term. Of course, it is always preferable to have head-to-head randomized controlled trials simultaneously comparing different alternative therapies. However, randomized controlled trials are costly, and in the case of H. pylori eradication, where there are a very large number of treatment regimens, it is not feasible to expect that all treatments would have been compared in such a manner. Enter the network meta-analysis, where multiple treatments can be evaluated even if they were never studied in a head-to-head fashion. This is accomplished by utilizing a common comparator. For instance, if treatments A and B are compared in trials, and treatments B and C in other trials, then treatments A and C can be compared via their performance against treatment B. This not only expands the available treatment comparisons for meta-analysis, but it can add power to the analysis by adding indirect comparisons to direct comparisons. When it comes to evaluating a network meta-analysis, we'll start with how the network meta-analysis is similar to the pairwise meta-analysis. Like a pairwise meta-analysis, the garbage-in, garbage-out rule holds. So not only must you be concerned with the quality of the smaller studies that constitute the meta-analysis, but one must also consider the heterogeneity of the constituent trials. This is compared using the familiar I-squared index, which gives a measure of heterogeneity ranging from 0 to 100%, with 75% generally considered high heterogeneity. There is also the Cochrane's Q test, which yields a p-value for the presence of heterogeneity. However, the network meta-analysis adds a layer of complexity to cross-study heterogeneity. Each pair of interventions can be compared indirectly through common comparators, but many of them will also have direct comparisons, like in a pairwise meta-analysis. When this is the case, it is referred to as a closed loop. In these cases, the results of the direct and indirect analyses should be compared. For instance, if the direct comparison shows superiority of one intervention, but the indirect comparison shows no statistical difference, then this can be an indicator of significant heterogeneity. Finally, due to the complexity of comparisons in a network meta-analysis, special attention should be paid to the network geometry, which is displayed in graphical format. The network geometry is difficult to explain in words, but an example is included in the online commentary. Put most simply, it provides a quick visual estimate for the number of studies and size of pooled populations representing each treatment, in addition to what common comparators were used to evaluate indirect comparisons. The reader can quickly gain a qualitative understanding of how much statistical power was behind each comparison in the study.
So let's talk about the methodology used in this specific study. You know, it was a network meta-analysis. So what would you say are the major strengths, potential weaknesses, and limitations of this study, Nima?
So the major strengths are, one, this is the most comprehensive and systematic meta-analysis of eradication treatments of H. pylori. Two, by using a unique method of network meta-analysis, the authors were able to assess multiple treatments and provide a rank order for treatments based on their capacity to eradicate H. pylori and likelihood to cause adverse effects. The major weaknesses are, one, large portion of the studies did not assess the antibiotic sensitivity or resistance of H. pylori, and thus baseline differences in resistance to antibiotics between groups cannot be ruled out. The majority of the studies included in this meta-analysis were conducted in East Asia, Europe, and the Middle East. Only six studies included patients from North America. The success of H. pylori eradication is highly dependent on antibiotic resistance, which differs significantly by region. For instance, clarithromycin resistance has been reported as high as 38% in Korea, whereas a recent study in U.S. veterans reported clarithromycin resistance to be 16.4%. Standard triple therapy with a PPI plus clarithromycin plus amoxicillin or metronidazole should not be used in areas where clarithromycin resistance is greater than 20%. Number of studies and the sample sizes for treatments such as hybrid and concomitant treatments were small, which can lead to bias from the small number of studies to either exaggerate or underestimate the effect sizes. The groupings of all adverse effects as a single outcome limited a more meaningful comparison of tolerability due to variations in treatment regimens, though the authors did report occurrence rate and rank for abdominal pain, alteration in taste, and headache with or without vomiting. And finally, most of the included studies poorly reported on factors such as smoking, alcohol consumption, reasons for patients' withdrawal, or poorly reported the adverse effects. Due to the limitations noted above, one single most effective treatment across the world is unlikely to be identified. However, this network meta-analysis adds to the growing evidence that several newer regimens, 10 to 14-day levofloxacin-based triple treatment, 10 to 14-day probiotic supplement triple treatment, 10 to 14-day sequential treatment, and 10 to 14-day concomitant treatment may be as or more effective than traditional 7 days triple or bismuth quadruple therapy.
So, Ben, I want you to imagine you have a 41-year-old man who's recently diagnosed with a duodenal ulcer. The biopsy obtained during the endoscopy procedure reveals that the patient is H. pylori positive, and so eradication therapy is indicated. Prior to his diagnosis, the patient was using over-the-counter Duo Fusion tablets twice a day for about 3 months to treat his symptoms. And the patient says that he has frequent episodes of diarrhea for many years, so he's always had a bad stomach, quote-unquote. What would you recommend for this patient for H. pylori eradication therapy? Does his prior use of Duo Fusion, this OTC product, influence your decision in this case? How about his complaint of frequent diarrhea? Are there any other patient-specific factors beyond allergies that might sway you to pick one treatment regimen over another? And would you consider using one of the newer eradication regimens in a case like this?
Well, I had to look this up myself. So for the listener's benefit, Duo Fusion is a combination product of famotidine, calcium carbonate, and magnesium hydroxide. For this patient, I would recommend bismuth quadruple therapy or probiotic supplemented triple therapy. Given his diarrhea, which is probably worsened by regular use of a magnesium salt, and chronic use of Duo Fusion, which indicates poorly controlled dyspepsia, bismuth quadruple therapy would be helpful as it contains a proton pump inhibitor and an antidiarrheal. In terms of an emerging regimen, probiotic supplementation has been shown to improve eradication rates over triple therapy in this and in other meta-analyses, and is also associated with lower rates of adverse effects such as diarrhea. So this too would be a good option. Lactobacillus species and Saccharomyces boulardii have been most frequently studied as probiotics. This particular patient should be counseled on stopping his Duo Fusion when the eradication regimen begins. And it is worth noting that patients requiring H. pylori treatment will frequently be self-treating their symptoms. Self-treatment with antacids may not only represent duplicate therapy with the eradication regimen, but may significantly reduce the absorption of antibiotics. Think cations with tetracycline or levofloxacin. There are several other patient-specific factors I would typically consider when choosing a regimen. The first is recent antibiotic exposure. For instance, recent macrolide use would lead me away from using triple therapy, and similar reasoning would hold true for levofloxacin-based regimens with recent fluoroquinolone use. The second factor would be past treatment failure. This particular network meta-analysis focused on treatment-naive patients, but regimens like levofloxacin-based therapy have been specifically studied as salvage therapy. Adherence is also a vital concern, and apart from antibiotic resistance, it is the most important factor in successful eradication. Frequency of dosing and pill burden should always be considered, and QID dosing is a significant limitation to bismuth quadruple therapy. Sequential treatment may offer some benefit in limiting pill burden, since the patient only takes two concomitant medications for half of the treatment. Some combination products exist, such as PrevPak and Pylera, to simplify regimens for patients, but insurance coverage is spotty. Cost and coverage may also be a barrier in the case of probiotic supplementation, as these will likely be purchased outside of insurance coverage. Lastly, drug interactions with chronic medications should always be considered. Good examples would be metronidazole in a patient taking warfarin, clarithromycin in a patient on simvastatin, or the introduction of a PPI in a patient taking azanavir or some of the tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Pullinger and Patel Shori, for joining us today for the iFormerX podcast and sharing with us your thoughts regarding Helicobacter pylori eradication treatment regimens. It's clear from your comments that you believe many of our older regimens are probably still the preferred regimens in North America, but there are some emerging regimens, particularly the new regimens with probiotic supplement and the concomitant regimen, which includes three antibiotics and a PPI, might be a suitable alternative for some patients because of their tolerability and high efficacy rates. Tell us what you think. Do you favor one H. pylori eradication regimen over another? Have you had any experience using some of these newer regimens? Post a comment. Only members of iFarmerX can post comments. Sign up today. It's free. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFarmerX, signing off.